Hi, this is David McQueen, and welcome to the David McQueen Podcast. This episode is Nicola Mendelsohn CBE, who is the VP of the Global Business Group at Meta. This conversation was a long time coming, so let's jump straight in, shall we?
Absolute pleasure to have you here on the Brave Leader Podcast, Nicola. So glad to have you here today.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm excited for the conversation.
Oh, no problem at all. No problem at all. It's been a long time coming. I've wanted to talk to you for ages, so this is really good. My first question, to start it off, what did you have for breakfast?
Nothing. I never eat breakfast. So yeah, I haven't for years. So my first meal will be lunch. I guess I do that fasting thing, but not intentionally now. It just makes me feel better.
Oh, it's like not quite intermittent fasting, but it's where you have you just start your meal later.
Yeah. So water. I've had for breakfast.
But are you not even hungry by then?
No, not at all. Not at all.
That's brilliant. I'm starving. I'm starving by the time I get up. I absolutely love that. Okay, fantastic. So no breakfast. All right, we're good. So again, as I said to you before and offline, I really just want to explore you and your leadership journey and what people can actually learn from yourself and what you've done. So I'm going to ask you first and foremost, how did you get into your leadership journey?
That's a big question. And it's not one that I ever consciously sat down and thought, today I'm going to be a leader. Right. But I think in many ways, it actually starts with, you know, your childhood. And your friendship circles and your family. So I was always, I've got a very tight-knit family, two younger brothers. So I was always being described as being bossy, which is a word that, you know, Sheryl Sandberg talks about, never gets used for boys. Mm. True, right? Yes. So I would always be organizing my brothers in what games we were going to play and, you know, presents for mum and dad for birthdays. And then, you know, as you started to get older, as I got older, I would be the one that would be, you know, arranging the nights out with friends and things like that. So it wasn't a conscious today I'm going to be a leader. I think there was something in me that was always interested in organizing, in doing. But it was probably in my early 20s when I took on my first official work leadership position. Although actually earlier than that, I used to work every weekend waitressing, and eventually I took on a larger pod of waiters and waitresses. So I guess it's all leadership, isn't it? I was in a youth club where I had leadership positions, but it was really in my 20s where I first took on my first team in advertising that I suppose I started my official leadership journey. But I guess it's a work in training from day one.
See, I love that, because I know when I ask people, they just think of it only in terms of work. This is when I became the leader in my role. But being able to acknowledge that there was those skills and the influence and the impact you had from before was quite powerful. So thank you for that. Really, really appreciate that. I guess in the context of work itself, and it doesn't have to be work, it could be family as well. Were there any specific role models that you had around leadership that really influenced you?
Yeah, loads. And here's where I feel very blessed. That I had both a mum and I had a grandma who both worked. So it was very normal for me growing up in the 70s in Manchester to see, you know, my mum and my grandma working out how you balance family and the role there, but also with the jobs that they did. So my mum had a banquet catering business, was available for weddings and bar mitzvahs, and my grandparents worked together selling haberdashery, fabrics, And so that was just very normal kind of constant presence in my life to see two extraordinary women who I love and adore working and doing and having a very tight-knit family. And then as I went through, you know, the early stages of my career, there were lots of people that were role models to me and that I would just always be like a sponge, just learning more and more from. One that really sticks out is a lady called Stevie Spring, who was somebody I didn't know at the time, but now has become a very dear and special and cherished friend, who I literally reached out to and said, when I was taking on a new role in a new company, you know, my most senior role at that time, when I was moving to Grey, I literally went and asked if she would give me the benefit of a coffee so I could pick her brains. And she did. And that was invaluable. And then, you know, look, I have the privilege of working for Sheryl Sandberg, who is just the most extraordinary role model, inspiration and leader. So many people that I can look to and learn from.
I love that. And I also add that I love that there was that consistency of women who were able to demonstrate leadership in as an example to you. Because way too often when I ask or in conversation with people, people pluck out so many men. It's just nice to see that there was that consistency around women leader role models in your sphere of influence and in your orbit. And I guess
that's a really important point as well, because one of the things that I've done a lot of is speak to other women about what matters to them. And they say the importance of role models. Yeah. And it's not just, you know, the woman that's the CEO. Yeah. You need role models at all levels. Yes. that you're at. And so, you know, when you're at school, you look up to the people that are 2 or 3 years above you. When you're early in career, actually the people you can learn the most from are the ones that are just 2 or 3 years ahead of you. And it was definitely something that I saw in evidence with some of the work that we've done at Meta on the She Means Business program. Yes. Where, you know, small business owners who were women were going, well, I don't know who to learn from, I don't know who to look to. Mm-hmm. So the importance of creating the networks around women, that's something that I think is really, really important, so that when you get more people on this over in the years to come, you'll have many more examples of people saying, actually, yeah, no, I've got lots of female role models. They're out there and they inspired me.
No, 100%. And I think that's, again, it's incredibly powerful. I remember talking to my daughters and just myself and my wife, we run our business together. And I remember them saying to me, you know, Dad, you're very straightforward and you don't take any rubbish, but Mum doesn't take any crap. And we're learning from Mum. And I'm like, so they're 24 and 20.
And I've got something for them.
They've obviously seen us for a while. But I was like, is that in terms of Mum dealing with me or with the business? Which one are you actually talking about there?
Don't ask the question. Exactly. Don't ask the question, I would say. By the way, we wrote a book called Make It Work, Lessons from Life in Business. Yes. And it was exactly for girls of your young women of your daughter's age. So I'm totally going to send you a couple of copies for both of them if you'll let me after.
Oh yes, definitely. And I'll make sure that there's a link in the show notes about this.
Oh yeah, there's a digital version of it as well. I didn't even know we were going to talk about that, but come I'm on really
we're
glad
having a conversation. Anything going to this is absolutely fine. Just to go back a bit, you mentioned something about She Means Business, which is something that I've heard about when I was doing my research around you and finding out a bit about the program. And I guess it kind of like ties into my next question. What for you was so important about being able to create that program, She Means Business, and being able to model that leadership for business owners?
Oh, so the She Means Business program was something we launched back in 2016. And it was really to address the fact that every year more and more research was being done around the fact that there aren't enough women setting up businesses at the same rate as men. Mm. So once you scratch under the surface of that, it's not because the women walking around don't have good business ideas. It's because they haven't got the networks, they haven't got the access to capital, they haven't got the relatable role models. So we thought, well, we can probably help on doing that. And since 2016, we've actually trained out over 1.5 million women all over the world, in countries all over the world, and they're setting up businesses. And here's the thing with digital, it's an amazing leveler. Because if you've got a good idea, you can set up a business now for not much money, and you know, you can do it around the hours that matter to you.
Yes.
And people don't know if it's a woman-owned business or a man-owned business, right? It's just a good business, and they can get out there. So the more that I think we can all be doing when women have got ideas is to say, yes, you can do this, go for it. I think the better it will be for everybody. So yeah, that's something that really, really matters to me. And it's work that will be ongoing because we'll never be, you know, the work will never be done.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. It really struck me again, as I said, when I was doing the background research, because I put out an ad. I do a lot of executive coaching, and I put out an ad or prompt on LinkedIn a little while back that I wanted to coach more senior C-suite leaders and what have you, just around communicating, what have you. And I was inundated by men. And I was like, it's all bloody men. That's all. So I literally said, I'm going to be specific about this. And I want to get at least 2-3 women who are CEOs who are either making 5 million or got 5 million pounds worth of funding. It was a teaser just because I could eliminate some of the guys out of the way. But it was so interesting that when I got some applications, some really were willing to jump on it, but some wrote themselves out of it as well. And I was just like, oh, just don't want you to do that. I really want you to realize that there are amazing people out there that can be an example for you. So this is, for me, having conversations with individuals like yourself is just being able to go, come on, look, there's amazing people out there that I just think that it's important for you to learn from and develop that leadership skill. So that's why, for me, it's so exciting to be able to have that conversation, if it makes sense.
Yeah, no, totally. And, you know, the research tells us more and more that women wait until they're perfect before they'll apply to a role. Whereas men instinctively go, I think I can do that, let me go for it. Yeah. And sometimes you can see in the same situation, the woman could actually be more qualified, have more experience, but she'll rule herself out.
Yeah.
And so again, I think the onus is on all of us to see what else that we can be doing to encourage those female leaders to come through and to shine, learn from one another, create the networks and, you know, go forwards.
100%, 100%. So what does good leadership look like for you?
So many things. I think it's about setting clear expectations, you know, having the vision, creating the milestones along the way so you take people on a journey. But I think there's something that really matters to me, which is show up as a human, show care, be authentic, and then do all that and create environments where people feel that they can be their very best, that they can be true as well. Because if you foster that, not afraid to be vulnerable, then I think you encourage people to be, to bring everything to work and to be true and not to hide things as well. And I think for so long in business there were so many artificial divides around how and what you should and could be, and the images that we expected of people, sort of this weird perfection thing, which is just not true. Mm. You know, if something's going on in your personal life and your bosses around you and your team colleagues don't know, Then not only do you have that thing going on in your personal life, you've got the stress of hiding it. Well, nobody's going to perform well in such an environment. So it seems like a crazy, weird thing that we did, that we made these unofficial rules in the workplace. And I think we should be challenging them. I really do, because I think that people should feel welcome. People should be able to contribute. People should feel that their voice matters. And I think this is particularly important when we come to underrepresented people in the workplace, which, quite frankly, if you're not a white man, is everybody else, right? And so if we're not creating those environments where people feel safe to speak and safe to do their best work, then actually businesses are not going to thrive and prosper.
Yeah.
And here's the thing, again, all the research that says that if we have more diverse workplaces, and again, you can't have that if you've not created that culture of trust, understanding, empathy, then businesses that are more diverse do better financially. So if you are a business person, it makes financial sense for you to have a diverse workforce. But you can't just tick the box on this, right?
Yeah.
You've got to be able to create the conditions for people to thrive and succeed. And so that's why at the heart of it, it's about leading with being a human and the things that come from there.
That's a whole book title there. It's a whole book title in there, definitely. So let me switch it slightly and focus on the side of leadership that people don't really address as often. And that's around having to make really tough decisions. And I'm really curious as to what is one or more of the toughest decisions that you've had to make as a leader.
Well, it sort of follows on from the last point, really, because it's all about people, right? And the toughest decisions are around people and that true human aspect, whether it's receiving the news that somebody's not well, which is really difficult. really, really difficult. Or, you know, the issues of, you know, when you have to let people go. I remember when I was at Grey, which is part of a, which is an advertising agency, part of a global network. There was a very significant client that decided to leave. Now, it happened that this client we were doing the best work for at the time, but it was a global decision that happened overnight. And unfortunately, we had to, you know, make some significant, you know, redundancies as a fact.
Yeah.
And it, you know, that felt hard and that felt unfair because the work we were doing was good and these people were great. And I think the first time you have to do something like that, it's really, really challenging. But what I've learned is that people want you to be honest. People want you to be straight. People want to be treated with respect. And whilst it never gets easier, definitely never gets easier, I think if you can apply those sort of thought processes to it, then I think people do appreciate that. Even in the moment, if it's incredibly difficult and challenging, I think people do appreciate it.
Definitely. I love that being candid and being honest so people know exactly where you are. Yeah. I say that to my kids. I say, I love you. You're going to hate me when I tell you off, right? You're absolutely going to hate me. And that's okay. You know, you can burn effigies of me in the garden, but I'm going to tell you.
I'm sure they don't.
I'm going to explain to you what it means and we can have a discussion later. And it's lovely to, again, to your point about being human, having that, it's horrible when people don't know where they stand. And knowing that there is a space for them to know that, that's quite powerful. So, okay, let's go on to succession planning now. What does succession planning look like for you, or succession as a whole, as a leader? What does it look like for you?
I think it speaks to the fact that you should be hiring people that are better than you. Because as a leader, you want to be learning as well. And the people that you're spending most of your time with are your direct leadership team. So making sure that the people that you're hiring are better than you gives you instant succession plan. And again, creating a culture where they're hiring people that are better than them. So they've got succession, and then succession becomes pretty easy, right? Because if you're not afraid to hire people better than you, and that's, you know, it's an easy thing to say, but it's quite a hard thing. Yes. And we've all worked in organizations where you can see people where you go, you didn't take the risk there. You didn't go bolder. You didn't hire the better person.
Yeah.
What's it in you that you're afraid of? And here's the thing, if you hire people that are better than you, they can take more of your stuff on so you can go on and grow and take on more things as well. So it becomes a force multiplier that is just becomes exciting and energizing. So that's how I think about it. Every single person that you bring into your organization is an opportunity to make everybody just that little bit better. So why wouldn't you do that?
What would your advice be to those who are threatened by individuals who are better than them, who come in when they're being hired?
I would say, what is it you're afraid of? Okay, be really honest. And I'm a great one for writing, a bit of journaling, like writing down what's the challenges here? What are the pros and cons? If it's about you and your own ego, that's not a good enough reason.
Yeah. And I ask that in the main because I know that there are individuals that will be afraid of that. And often they need to hear the voice of somebody like yourself who has been able to build a really good career and build a really good reputation as a leader and say, you know, what are you really scared of? If you've got here and if you're at this position, what are you afraid of if you're going to have somebody else who comes along? And I love that, being able to journal it or explore it. Okay, I want to talk to you forever, but I'm mindful of your time, so I'm going to keep my questions tight. We've got two more questions, and then we'll round it up from here. And the second one I'm going to ask you, and again, these are similar questions that I ask all my guests. But if I was to ask those who you lead, what do you do well, and what do they think you can improve on? What do you think the answers would be to both of those questions?
I would hope. Well, actually, I know because at Meta we have those specific questions and we have reviews twice a year. So I know what the team says about me because they tell me directly. And again, that speaks to creating environments that are open. I think they would say that my style is pretty enabling, that I raise ambition, that I make people think bigger and go bigger together. I think they would say that, well, it speaks to some of the things we were just talking about, that I encourage people to bring their whole selves to work, that it's environments where people can challenge, where people can talk about their own fears and concerns. I think they would say that hopefully that I'm quite fun to be around. And again, I think that's an important thing. And my favorite poster that I have in my office when I used to be in the office was that meetings are made for laughter. Mm-hmm. It just lightens things up in terms of, you know, back to the artificial constructs that we put around the world of work. I think they would say that they would want to protect my time and that I should do a better job at protecting my own time, which I'm, you know, again, I'm a work in progress on that, but I am doing better on it, and to say no to more things, which I am learning as well, because we actually have a thing at Meta called non-goals, where you publicly say the things that you're not going to do. So that actually helps to have that framework as well. In order to do that. So some of the things that I'm working on as well.
Love that, non-goals, I love that. I'm gonna slip in a little question here. Trust me, it's a safe one, I promise you. But I just wanted to know, how in any way has the pandemic affected the way that you lead, or even those who are direct reports of you who are leading as well? Have you seen any specific changes?
I think it's changed all of us, right? I mean, how could the events of the last 2 years not?
Yeah.
I thought I was pretty close to my team, but when week in, week out, you're staring into their homes and various things happen, whether it's the delivery van arriving to a child coming in to whatever, you just get a different intimacy with the people that you work with. And, you know, I've had people on my team who have, you know, some of them who I've never met in person still, and I feel deeply close to them.
Yeah.
Because of this intimacy that I was talking about. So I think it's changed us all. And I think back to those very early days. Well, let's be honest, people were very scared.
Yeah.
Very scared. And it was, I think what it's done is allowed us all to think more thoughtfully from a work perspective about the importance of investing in ourselves as people, giving ourselves a break, giving ourselves time off. Because you can see the impact that it's having on people. And so being very open and loud about talking about those things, I think is really important as well. So, yeah, I think it's changed all of us. But in some respects, it's made us closer as well.
Yeah. Thank you for being able to take my little sidebar question that I threw in as well.
Of course. Cool. You can ask me anything. Keep going.
I'm going to round it up with my final question. And again, I really love the responses you've given, because my focus here is how can we get people to be more inclusive and more thinking about the people that they lead with and how they're taking people on a journey. And so this last question is more about your leadership style. Do you believe that it's actually shaped by the company you're working with, or is it something bigger than that?
I think it's a bit of both. I think I think it starts with you, and I think it starts with being comfortable to lead as your authentic self. But of course, the people around you, the situations, the companies, it evolves you and it changes you, because it puts you into different environments and different cultures. I think it's important that to be really clear as a leader, what are the things that you hold dear? What are the values that you hold dear? And then if you can find a company which has the same values, that's when you're in the sweet spot that should allow you to do the very best work of your career. And certainly from a Meta perspective, what I have found is a company that embraces all the things that matter to me, the openness, the directness, the ambition. And at the same time, they're nurturing me. I remember I'd had more training being at Meta in my first year than I'd had in my previous 20 years in advertising. Wow. So it's a company that's happy and wants to actively invest in its people so that they can grow. Because if they're growing and if they're happy and they're thriving, then of course the output for the business is going to be strong. And isn't it interesting that these are often the things that are cut first when companies are going through difficult times?
Yes,
and
yes,
yet these are the things that matter the most to people.
Yeah.
In terms of what we're doing. So, you know, I am grateful and feel privileged to work at this company and to have been on my own leadership journey that I've been on as a result of being here at this time.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Nicola. It was well worth, for me, it's well worth the wait. We have finally get to speak to you and have a conversation, even if it is digital. And at some point, I'm sure our paths will cross again. But really, really appreciate you taking the time out to ask that, to give us your flavor of inclusive leadership. And thank you for being so honest and open up on that as well. I really appreciate you. Thank you.
Oh, and thanks to you. I've absolutely loved it. And given that people can't see what we're seeing, everybody should know that his backdrop is of the Caribbean. And so I've spent this last time together just looking at the ocean and a palm tree, which is something we're all jealous of now, right? I can't wait to get
back. It's calming. The intention is to calm it. It's set aspiration, but fantastic. Thank you so much. Thank you again.
Oh, and thank you, David. I've loved the conversation.
Dave McQueen Podcast is a Q Talent Management production. Theme music is Biscuit by Lacrim.